Are you looking for a champion's insight from a fan's perspective into the world of sports and entertainment?
Then check out In the Key with me, NBA champion BJ Armstrong.
And me, sports analyst Gerald Brown.
Right here on Podcast One. We know the business, and each week we'll chat with celebrity guests and provide an informed discourse on the cultural beats of the moment.
Download new episodes of In the Key every Thursday on PodcastOneSports.com, the Podcast One app, or Apple Podcasts.
Recorded live at Corolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. The church, we've got a mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you, Andrew.
Yeah, we do. You know, everyone, listen up, Matt, Gary. Adam has a new palate cleanser for us all. He's got, he thinks we need something.
Good earthquake.
Need a good earthquake.
Big one.
We need a big earthquake. Up like, what the hell?
I don't like it.
I like it.
I do.
We need it.
A big one. A big palate cleanse.
My bedroom's on the third story, so that kind of worries me.
Yeah, everything's fine out here. We just need a good earthquake.
Earthquake or maybe an asteroid collision? How big should we go?
I don't want to end the planet. Okay. I just want to shake things up a little.
All right.
If my thing was built in the mid-80s, am I okay?
If it's retrofit.
No, just don't listen to Drew. Drew doesn't know anything.
It's true, I don't.
Oh, I was asking you.
I know you were. Drew was offering his laypertise.
It was not even,
laypertise.
That's not bad.
That's not bad. That's layperson's expertise. Laypertise.
Nice.
All right. Here is the thing about earthquakes. Mm-hmm. It is only masonry that you have to worry about. It is only unreinforced masonry, meaning masonry that doesn't have steel in it, like rebar in it, rods in it. The worst is just bricks put together with mortar.
Right.
Because it's all pretty much like, the plastic wrapping scissors would come in. Now, imagine you trying to get into that. Like, all you're doing is flexing it back and forth and flexing it back and forth and flexing, trying to get a toe hold and fingernail. And ironically, you need scissors to get into the scissors. You're getting a knife out and you're tearing. And all it's doing is flexing and moving and flexing and moving. And you go, is it thick? Is it sturdy? Is it stout? And it's like, no, the wind would blow the tab over, but I can't get it. It just flexes. And now, imagine if that were like matzah. Like super rigid and super hard. Well, just it would snap.
Yeah.
It would just pop. And the thing about the movement in the earthquake is if something is rigid, like a chimney, it has no flex and it just falls over.
So are all chimneys going over? I mean, if it's big enough? Or are they reinforced in some way that some don't?
Well,
if there's brick around it.
Well, what they do is they go up and they do a retrofit and blah, blah, blah.
Aren't they all just brick around a metal casing kind of?
Flew,
yeah. I guess the bricks still fly off of it.
They are that way formerly, and now they're built much differently. And now everything's built with a ton of clips and steel and straps, and everything's got plywood now. If anyone has ever had the experience of trying to tear a piece of plywood off the outside of a wall, like a piece of shear-walled plywood, not thick plywood, half inch thick, half inch, just nailed onto 2x4s, and you trying to tear that off, you can't do it.
Just splits and tears and
barely.
Yeah.
You put a hole in it with your hammer, but that's as big as the hole gets, the size of your hammerhead, and then nothing. If you'd ever done an honest day's work in your life, Drew, you would know exactly what I'm talking about. You can't get it apart. If you've done demo, you've realized just how tough it is to tear everything apart. And then you realize – now, on the other hand, you can take an old cinder block wall and push it over with your hands. It'll fall over, or hit it with a sledgehammer and a big chunk will fall onto the ground. But you can't do that with stucco, plywood, and lath. And now they've gotten into whatever they've gotten into now with all the hold downs and the Simpson straps and Tico clips and whatever. They've gone insane. They've gone insane. But when it comes to just tearing apart as an 80s house, you're not going to be able to do it.
Yeah.
And so the earthquake is not going to do anything. Now, a vase can land on your head.
Yeah.
And
glass could explode at you, I suppose.
I guess you could, some glass, or you could step on a power line that fell outside. But in terms of being inside your house, what's going to happen? Nothing, unless there's some, unless the, it can slide off the foundation, and the foundation, which is normally masonry, can fall apart.
But even that's just going to sort of split, right? It's not going to like collapse the whole thing.
The buildings during the last earthquake we had that suffered were these apartments that had like subterranean parking.
Right,
and exactly. So they'd pancake.
Yeah.
The subterranean part was the part that the mortar and brick, not the brick and mortar, but the masonry is the part that collapsed. And then the wood structure came down on top of it. But the wood structure never comes apart.
Yeah.
And the freeway has so much rebar in it. That never happens either, although they have started wrapping the cement columns because they've realized that from the San Francisco earthquake and here as well, you take all this rebar, just tons and tons and tons of rebar, and you encase it in the cement.
Yeah.
But when the cement breaks down and starts to fracture, the rebar is not really structural. It's there to enforce this. Reinforce the cement. When the cement starts breaking down, it starts sort of chipping on it on top of itself. So they now wrap it in steel. Imagine wrapped now versus from the inside out.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And the irony is that they do any, not irony, but iron worker E is, you picture anything out of steel with rivets and everything and welds and stuff, nothing ever come apart. It can't. It's got to be brittle. You think about anything, any material that's brittle, that can go down.
Well, also the ground can liquefy.
Oh, yeah.
And that can crush a floor, you know.
Things well, no, what happens is, in San Francisco, it's a bunch of backfill, liquefaction, and buildings fell over.
One floor sort of.
Yeah, but it's never going to be the fault of the wood or the structure.
Right.
It'll be what's underneath it. So if the ground is going to open up, you'll fall in.
Yeah.
But it's never going to be – people have this fantasy that a beam is just going to land on them from the ceiling, and that's not going to happen.
I think they imagine being in a big building with lots of stuff flying around, cement falling off, glass flying down. You know what I mean? Imagine if you're in the foyer of the Intercontinental building and things starts to really shake.
I would not want to be on the 35th floor of the whatever building.
I wouldn't either.
Now, it's totally engineered and you'd just be scared to death because the thing's like on rollers, but you would sway so much that you would completely
freak out.
That would be an uncomfortable feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember the movie Earthquake?
Yep. O.J. Simpson. And,
No.
Yeah. He was in it. And also, I'm sorry. He was in the Towering Inferno.
Yes,
beg
you
your
should
pardon. Beg your pardon.
Apologize.
The earthquake was
Richard Roundtree.
And
black simile. You screwed up, Drew.
And Moses.
You took your black guys, and you mixed.
I was putting OJ in both of them, frankly. But we had what's the name? Played Moses was in this one, right?
Charlton
Heston was in it, right? Earthquake.
What do you do when I'm not around?
I do the same thing.
But you can't sit next to your wife and go Shaft. Come on, it's the guy.
You know, like, but Charlton Heston was the earthquake, right? Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Charlton Heston was an architect.
Yeah.
He wanted to build those buildings stronger.
Right.
But they're cutting back on costs.
Right.
She cut back on costs. What price you put on a life? I like there was a lot of that back then. You know, it's like, if we go with cheap Chinese steel, we can save a few thousand.
If I remember,
you want to tell that to the mother of the grieving after they lost their son that you saved a few thousand. It was all that everything got preachy in that 70s.
And didn't that movie have surround sound? Is that what they called? No, they called it. Wait. They called it. It was like a big drum in the front of the room that would sort of give this.
It was
low
Irwin Allen.
Yeah,
and.
What did they call that sound?
Yeah. It wasn't surround sound.
It wasn't surround sound. No, it was in sounded like that, though.
Yeah, it was something Rama or something or something.
Sense around.
Sense around. Sense around. The 70s sucked.
Oh, it was great. Those were great movies. Richard Roundtree, you know what part he played?
I can't. The police chief?
No. We're not going to let a black guy be a police chief in 1973.
Wasn't he I remember being on the
George
ground there.
No, George Kennedy was.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
George Kennedy was the cop. The cop was hanging out at the bar.
Yeah.
And Richard Roundtree was the motorcycle daredevil.
Oh.
And it was kind of funny because Chuck Heston was married to, like, you know, Agnes Moorehead or something. Like, I mean, like a queen of the golden screen, you know, the Great White Way, you know, Broadway or something. He was married.
Ava
Gardner. No, oh, yeah. In the movie.
In the movie, yeah.
He was married to Ava Gardner, but he had his girl. His girl was Karen Black.
Oh.
And they didn't really make many bones about it. Like, hi, sweetie. And he'd, like, show up at her apartment, like, you know, one day me and you were moving up north. And, like, no one ever went, like, and he married? He was married, isn't he?
Well, that's why that was cool, man.
And she was a bad
wife. You're uptight,
wife.
Dude. You're uptight. Mm-hmm.
All right. All right. We got some calls up there, Drew.
Before you do, let me do True Car.
Do True Car.
Car tips you might not know. Getting that weight out of the car helps you improve your mileage. Keep fob to your chin helps you increase its range. And another tip, True Car helps people get used cars. That's right. With a True Car certified dealer network and a nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll get that true price on used cars as well as new cars, and you'll enjoy a real pricing on actual inventory. So when you see that scattergram, you see what others paid, so you know you're getting a good deal. You know it's a competitive price. Those True Car dealers compete with one another, whether it's new or used, and you'll know it's actual inventory, a vehicle on one of the True Car certified dealers' lot, and overall a simpler buying experience. You'll enjoy not only simpler, but faster buying experience by connecting with a True Car certified dealer. That's right, new or used, 1 million used cars on the True Car certified dealer network. So when you're ready to buy, new or used, check out True Car and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
Okay, Drew, looking up. I had a question for you, yoga teacher. So two things popped my mind. First thing I looked up, I saw guys having back surgery, and it made me think, oh, yeah, question for Drew. And then I saw a suicidal thing, and then I thought, they're talking last week about this lawyer, and he's upset about the environment, and he set himself on fire.
Oh, yeah.
And then I was like, well, he was 60, and he had, like, back surgery or shoulder surgery or something, and he wasn't able to work for a little while, I thought strung out.
Absolutely. That is like saying the Unabomber had a specific, you know, sort of bitch. He had a specific issue he wanted to make everybody know.
But he was really pro-environment.
Yeah.
And so he lit himself on fire. No. And I was like, no. I think he was on pain meds.
No, he was
strung
out.
Out of his mind. That something.
That was a crazy manic suicidal gesture of some type.
Well, when I heard back surgery or something, like he had neck surgery and was unable to work. And I thought, sounds like some pain meds going on
100%.
Here. But Drew, you can look that up. I just like that the headlines is environmentalist. Yeah. You know, set himself on fire because he really was against what was going on environmentally.
No.
Yeah. What surgery did he have? And it made me immediately think. All right, so let's talk to Joe from Arizona. Lower back surgery. Yes, Joe.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, all of a sudden you cut out. Hey, before this, I was just thinking about it. I listened to you guys back in the day with Loveline. And Adam, I have never missed one of your podcasts, and I've never missed one of your guys' Dr. Drew and Adam podcast since you started the podcast.
Wow, nice.
Hero, Joe. Thank you, brother.
Maybe I have no life, or I don't know. But,
wow, look at me. No. I had to be here during all this. I have a life.
Anyway, I know that you guys, obviously I listen a lot, are pretty down on back surgery and Dr. Drew. You are, and I totally understand why, but I kind of have a theory on back surgery because it worked for me, and you guys talk a lot about how terrible it is because it obviously is.
Well, hold on. Wait. You got to be very specific. What kind of procedure did you have?
2 years ago, 2016, I had a L5S1 fuse.
Okay, and why?
Well, because it was bulging.
Was it bulging, or did you have spondylolisthesis?
Hello?
Did you have spondylolisthesis or just disc bulging?
I never heard of spondylolisthesis, so okay.
Was one vertebra sort of slipped over the other?
What I was told was that the cartilage in between the disc was completely gone, and the two discs were touching each other, okay. And so I was always having pain in my neck, in my legs, and kind of shooting pains, and I had that for like 10 years. I got a pretty laborious job, and
did you have any weakness in your legs?
Oh, yeah. I had weakness.
All right. So one thing we always say is if there is motor dysfunction, you have to have the surgery. So you had it for the right reason. It's not a treatment for pain. It's a treatment for motor or balance issues. If your motor balance is off because of impingement, then you have to. Or if there's a chance that you get spinal stenosis to the point that you can sort of get paraplegia.
I know two guys who it's worked out for, and they're both Jews. So I'm going to say if you're Jewish, it's okay.
I'm not Jewish. I'm a Mormon, though. But I have noticed in my own life that it seems like the majority, and it's a very high majority of people that get back surgery, they actually only get it to not go back to work, it seems like. So they're really in the back of their mind going, I'm going to be able to go on disability for the rest of my life, even if they need it or they don't need it.
Yeah, there's lots of secondary gains. And the other problem is once you get one surgery, then you need another. And then because it's not a treatment for pain, the pain doesn't go away. And then then you're demoralized. But no one tells them this is not a treatment for pain. This is not going to work. This is not likely to work for the pain.
I think we're starting to catch on to that, but just starting, and it's been a long time. And this whole opioid thing is starting to catch on as well in terms of people waking up to it.
Yep.
And Joe?
Yeah.
I'm glad you're back. I'm glad your surgery worked out, and I'm also glad that you've listened to so many shows.
Hey, every single one, every day.
Thanks, brother. Awesome. Appreciate it.
And Adam, you always say that it's nice to hear where it gets you through your day. It's gotten me through 20 years at my job. I really do think without guys like you and Stern, a lot of people like us would have quit a long time ago.
What kind of job do you make have?
Pedophile. Human trafficking. I'm division.
On pedophile, strangely enough.
On pedophile. Yeah. What's your job? Sorry. Something that hurt his back. It's not computer.
I'm a UPS driver.
Oh, thanks. Hey, listen, I believe it sincerely. It's the most flattered I ever get is when people take me and Drew and whomever, but especially when it's me, with you to work.
Yeah.
That is nice. I always felt like it was my, it got me through the day. It was my friend. I understand what it's like to feel sort of isolated out there. They're jobs that are lonely that you don't think about because you've never had like a lonely job. Mm. You've had jobs that are overwhelming and stressful and stuff, but they're jobs that are lonely where you're just kind of, some guy hands you a shovel and goes, I'll be back in 10 hours. And you're just standing there, weird.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of carpenter jobs that were like lonely. I've had jobs where there's been a good crew and there's some hijinks and they're nice and you're passing them and there's interactions and you're eating lunch together. And then there's weird kind of lonely jobs. And the lonely jobs, depending on your wiring, I'm not wired for that, they're lonely. Like you need that voice. Like the dog when you turn the talk radio on before you leave the house. It's like it has a friendly voice that's in the background. And it's weird because I know there are guys who I've worked with who want to be left. Their whole plan is to work alone.
Yeah.
And they like that.
Yeah.
But if you're not wired, well, I was wired like a comedian. So why would I need someone to bounce ideas off of, and I didn't know it. Let's talk to Kevin, 29, from Phoenix. Kevin?
Hi. Hello. How you doing?
Good, man. What's going on?
Cool. Oh, I love you guys. You guys are awesome. I listen to you all the time, too, on my commute to work and everything.
Thank you.
But I'm a yoga teacher, and at the end of my class, I always like to say like a couple words of wisdom is usually what I say. but I was wondering if you guys had like favorite motivational lines or quotes that you like a lot that you use in your personal life or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I get a lot from you guys, and I always write them down in a little book I have. So let's
this is kind of an interesting thought. I'm sort of aversive to motivational shibboleths, you know, empty phrases. However,
well, you can't say they're empty.
No, hang on. I understand. But I bet you that we probably use more than we realize, even though I find them kind of aversive. And I was just thinking to myself, here's something that motivates me. Thank you and mahalo. It's like, that's it.
It just means thank you twice.
Thank you and mahalo is like, because it throws me back to my first experience going to Hawaii and wondering what the hell they were talking about. You said you thought it was like, I thought it was trash goes here because all the trash cans had mahalo on it. You thought it was like 20,000 hamburgers served because it was on the McDonald's sign.
I just the Hawaiians are the laziest people on the planet, at least linguistically. So like mahalo means like 28 things.
Yeah. It's like aloha.
Yeah, they just go, oh, what's a mahalo mean? It means hello, it means goodbye, it means thank you, it means sorry. It's like, it just means everything. So, but saying thank you and mahalo is like saying thank you. And thank. Like, it's, I don't know. Gary can look it up, but
thanks, gratitude, admiration, praise, esteem, regards, or respect.
Yeah, so saying thank you and thank you and mahalo is just like saying gracias and yes. Yes.
Gracias and regards.
No, it just means yes and yes. Yeah. It's like you're taking two different languages. It's like you're saying yes and gracias.
But are there any motivational phrases?
Not gracias. Yeah. That's thanks. Sorry. Yes. Regards. Yes. Yes. You're right. Like, yes.
Are there any motivational phrases?
It's like saying what and K. Sorry. Go ahead.
K.
Yeah. Who? Who? What? No. No. Yeah. 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 What? Sorry.
Do we use any motivational phrases?
First thing I want you to do is make sure at the beginning of class is tell them to breathe in, take a big deep breath, and then blow out all that stale air.
No, it's at the end. The end. He wants a motivation.
Bring it. I'm telling you. Okay, but start right. The class with bring it in, bring it in, bring it in, deep, deep, deep inhale, and then blow out all that stale air.
Stale air.
Dragging around.
I try not to use all those little things.
All right.
I know the stuff I like.
I like my. If it doesn't make you money and it doesn't make you happy, don't do it. I feel like there's way – and people go, huh? Well, there's first things first. Make you happy doesn't mean eating cake.
Right.
It just means there's so many people engaging in so much that they don't need to engage in. You know what I mean? There's a kind of a keep walk. Yeah. Like, you have to think, is this helping me? Is this making me money? I don't mean making money – in a greedy way. I just mean, like, do I need to do this? Is this something I have to go to work? I have to go engage in? I have to go talk to this person about this thing because their employee or whatever it is. And does it make you happy? And that could be gratified or whatever. And if the answer is no, then think long and hard about sending this shitty tweet or email. It was from our own Teresa Strasser, I think, many, many years ago, where she was telling me about, like, I'm going to send an email that, you know, program director sent me a shitty email, and I'm going to tell him to. And I was just like, sweetie, if it don't make you money and it don't make you happy, just don't send it. Just don't send it. Get on with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're in a world that's more and more that's a mandate, at least for me. Drew, what do you got?
I'm just thinking that Nietzsche has a lot of aphorisms that I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I remember liking lots of his.
Worthless. Come on. This guy's he worships you. He's calling
well,
in.
Well, look him up.
Drew, look it up.
That I use all the time is when you got from Jay Leno, why does it have to be so difficult? And everyone always loves when I say that one all the time. So.
Well, I, as Jay Leno told me when I was filming something with him, you know, I'll tell Drew, though Drew's now lost trying to find out what the shaman have said. You know, there's things that you want to do. Like, hey, you're doing a documentary about Tom Cruise or about Paul Newman. You want to talk to Tom Cruise. Like, you'll never get through it. There's the publicist and everything. You know, it's like you'll never get to where you want to go, and then you can call Jay Leno and do it next week. And whenever you thank Jay Leno, he goes, it doesn't have to be that hard. It's just show business. It's not that big a deal.
Oh my God.
I'll just work it out. We don't have to build this firewall around everyone, and there don't have to be 18 emails. You can just say, "Fine, let's do it. Knock it out. Take 20 minutes."
Oh yeah,
and
so many people deal with that.
It's so much easier. Matt, you do like you see people. Matt says to me, somebody sent you an email, wants you to do an interview for their documentary. I go, look, find a spot on the schedule and put it on there. And then that's it. We don't talk about it until the day before when he reminds me. And I go, I don't remember agreeing to that. And then I yell at him. But it doesn't have to be that difficult. Matt, you and I have done things where it's like, send him another email. Ask him once again. Now, what did his publicist say? He didn't answer the question we're asking. Like, just this insanity, right? Like, it's a big whoop. I made the definitive documentary about Paul Newman's racing. Tom Cruise should have been included in that documentary, and now it's just forever, and he's not. Because we could never get through his goddamn people, who did reach out to us at some point and accuse us of something.
Of what?
There was some shitty story about him somewhere, not something, and they sort of accused us of planting it.
Jesus.
This is one of my...
Wow.
I argued with... this is one of my epic arguments from... I argued with Mike August from Glendale to San Diego about this one subject. We had a 2 hour and 71 minute... 2 hour, sorry, and 41 minute argument, but which is... I said, Mike, you got accused of planting this shitty story about Tom Cruise. We got an email. Drew's done with you, by the way.
I can't.
All right,
I
good. Then we're done.
But
we're
go
done.
Ahead. Thank I'm listening. You got a shitty email.
We get a shitty email from Tom Cruise's people saying, "Did you plant this shitty story?" And Mike, my response to Tom Cruise's people that I wanted Mike to do was, "No, we don't know what this story is, and we don't know what the publication is." Mm. Mike August's response was going to be, no, but we can contact this publication and get it taken down.
Why? I mean, why would he want to take that all on, you know?
He thought he was going to make good with Tom Cruise's people.
Yeah.
I then said, when we're still probably in Glendale, if you say no, we can, but we'll take it down, it makes it look like you put it up.
Yeah.
A lot like you put it up.
Absolutely.
And then he said, they never accused us of putting it up. The email said, what do you know about this shitty story? I said, that's accusing you of being behind it.
Yeah.
That's why they sent you a thing that said, what do you know?
Yeah.
When your wife says, what do you know about lipstick on the collar of your shirt? She's not asking you what your knowledge is of lipstick.
That's right. What do you know about this bill? What do you know about this receipt?
Right. So what do you know does mean they thought we planted this story. He kept reverting to, they didn't accuse us of it. I said, that's publicists for accusing you. That's as much of an accusation as you can. What do you know about this story?
Mm-hmm.
And then number two, we don't know anything about the story, but we'll just contact the publication, get it removed. Sounds like you put it up.
Yeah,
sounds like you did that.
100%.
This took 100 miles to explain.
Oh, God.
He said, why is it an admittance of guilt?
Oh.
I said, it's an admittance of guilt because it sounds like you have a relationship with this publication. And he'd go like, we don't. We never even heard of that. And I'd go like, that's exactly right.
Mike does not work in the world of innuendo and nuance. He works in the world of concrete and fact.
That's what I love about him.
Right.
And I said, Mike, here's the answer. I've never seen this article, and I have no idea where this website is, and I wouldn't know how to contact anybody there because I don't know anyone's name.
Yeah.
I've never spoke to anyone. Not, we'll get it taken down.
That's crazy.
Well, the crazy part is that we argued the entire way, which is me explaining it'll sound to them like we planted it. And his thing is we will curry favor with them by getting it taken down. I said, no, it'll be quite the opposite.
Yeah.
Their assertion that we put it up will now come into focus. It'll be exactly what they thought. They'll go, aha, mm-hmm. Oh, you didn't put it up, but now you're going to take it down?
Yep.
We accused you of putting it up, and now you're going to take it down.
Yep.
It's exactly what we thought.
Yep.
So I said, the answer to them is never heard of it, and sorry. Sorry about the article.
Pure and simple.
Nothing to do with us. That's right.
Megan.
Weird that we had to argue about that for 100 miles, though, wasn't it? Mm.
Yes. But it does sound like Mike. Megan.
Megan, 26, Chicago.
Hi.
Hey.
How are you guys doing?
Good. What's going on? Oh, suicidal something? What's happening?
Yeah.
Hey, Gary, did you find out what happened to that lawyer who set himself on fire?
I can't find a single article that said he had a surgery or that he was on medication. And I'm looking. I haven't stopped
looking. Well, the medication part, we'll do the surgery math. Yeah. I heard at like a news report that he was unable to work for 6 months because of a surgery. And then he set himself on fire. And I did the oxycodone math.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
Megan.
Hi, I have two young men in my life that have both struggled with mental illness and have kind of gone through the system, have been called on involuntarily to be in a 72-hour hold and have come back out just kind of not believing in the system and not getting any help at all. And they're kind of still in this place of just total hopelessness. And I just don't know what to do or how to help somebody that doesn't want to go out and seek that help themselves.
These are who are these guys to you? Friends?
One is a friend who's almost 30, and one is more so not necessarily suicidal at this point in time, but definitely suffering from mental illness. My brother, who's 23.
And do these mental illnesses have a name yet?
No, not well. My friend, bipolar depression.
Okay.
And my brother, we're not sure. He didn't disclose anything when I did have to put him in voluntarily.
So he wouldn't let you talk to the doctors or anything to figure out what's going on.
I was able to talk to the counselors like through the exit interview and all that, but he never disclosed anything other than saying that he has some sort of anxiety. Right. So,
all right. Well, the treatment works with these conditions. I mean, these are highly, highly manageable, particularly the bipolar. I don't understand. To me, I wonder, is there an addiction in either of them that they want to keep using or something? I mean, what is behind their resistance?
Neither of them are really inclined to the idea of taking medication.
But look, there is. Why not get, I'm blanking on the name of it now, the magnets. You know, they have these now magnets that they can focus in the mood centers, and you go in there for recurrent treatments or ketamine therapy. There's all kinds of things that work for depression now. But the magnets are extremely effective. They focus in, it's called transcranial magnetic stimulation, TMS.
That sounds good.
Yeah, and you go in and there's no medicines and you just go get the magnet and it sends an electrical charge through that part of the brain and the outcomes are very, very good.
But also remember, you're not in charge of them. You do what you can.
And you help.
But I would argue whenever somebody is resistant like that irrationally, that's part of their condition. So you have to kind of not argue with it so much because that's part of the disorder. And have to just, go, all right, you don't want to do that? Fine, we're going to do this. And you just got to forge on. And when they come out of it, the resistance tends to diminish if they get some positive results.
I'll tell you about LifeLock. How much is your identity worth? Well, according to an online security education company, the rate is about $1,200 to hackers on the dark web. Sure, that means they can make at least $1,201. Off of your identity. Please, you're out there all day long. You're online. You're shopping everywhere. Your stuff's spread out everywhere. Today, connected world just takes one weak link for criminals to get in. New LifeLock Identity Theft Protection adds Norton Security to help protect against threats to your identity and devices that you can't see or fix on your own. Protect yourself. It's 2018. You're out there. Your information's out there. It's convenient. You get to do all your shopping from home and get all the best deals and all that kind of stuff, but the hackers know that as well. If you have a problem, their agents will work to fix it, but you won't because you'll have LifeLock. Right, Drew?
I do. Gary, look up the TMS thing I did with Dr. Hutton. No one can stop every cyber threat, prevent all identity theft, or monitor transactions at all businesses. But new LifeLock with Norton Security is able to uncover threats you might otherwise miss. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use that promo code Adam for an additional 10% off your first year. That is promo code Adam for an additional 10% off your first year.
That lawyer had a back injury that limited his work.
Now, do the pain med math. That's it.
Look, there's a lot of jobs where a back injury could definitely lessen your hours. A lawyer's a kind of a weird one where back injury means you couldn't work. Because figure, I get it, but lawyering, you could do a little work from home. I don't know what the most strenuous part about being a lawyer is on one's
not,
back.
Not back. You can do it on the bed. So it's 231, Gary, is that right?
312.
312. 312, Megan. I did a whole podcast on transcranial magnetic stimulation. So go to number 312. Is that behind the paywall?
Yes, it is. Go to podcastone.com/premium to sign up. You'll get that and everything from all that we do.
All the hundreds that are there.
Gary, pass that story off to Maxipata because I want to keep after that lawyer who was an extreme environmentalist who also had back pain. So lit himself on fire.
I'm going to predict bipolar disorder. I'm going to make a prediction that you're going to, if you really dig.
I'll go for that. But yeah. You have enough back pain where you can't lawyer. And I'm going to go ahead and say there was some opioid stuff going on.
100%.
All right. Well, I'm just saying, hey, news folks.
You do your job. I look at news all day long and say that. Like, that's not, whenever anything that pertains to health or mental health, I just go, okay, well, that's just not right.
Oh, true.
Totally
true.
False.
Just knock the mic over. Yeah. All right, he's dropped the mic. He's out, everybody. Go to adamcarolla.com, find out about live shows everywhere. Come see me. I'll see you and Chassie. Lots of good movie offerings over there. Two S's and a Y. Drew?
Go to dr.com. Come see me. I'll see you. Go to Family Podcast there, the YouTube page, the Facebook. Check it all out.
So, until next time, Adam Carolla for Dr. Drew Singh. Mahalo.